chickens out. Round two of the Doc versus you and Apple battle. We're here to discuss the Mac Show and the week in Apple and the keynote that was and the panel I have. Well, I've got to say, if I'd have drawn it out of a hat, I couldn't have been happier with the result. Look at this panel. What a bunch. Did I say that right? Starting top left, Doc Rock.
Hey, what's up, gang? Good to be on with such esteemed colleagues. I feel like we're at Macworld, brother. Like, yeah. This is normally what I would see right about this time of year at this time, but we'd somewhere in a pub instead of all on the show.
The only difference was if we were at Macworld, Andy and Atco wouldn't be there.
Oh.
I didn't say that, Andy. That was you.
That's okay. I'm just here volunteering on, I spent 24 hours in New York. My train got in at around 6:30 a.m. I've gotten 2 hours of sleep, and I'm here as promised, but by all means, throw shade.
I think
if this is going to be the theme, that you're going to be throwing shade on people instead of throwing light upon complex issues, we all make our choices in life.
You haven't listened to this network, have you, Andy?
Are you going to be happy with those choices is the only question.
The only time any light gets thrown on complex issues is when you're on.
What I'm trying to do is make you feel bad about yourself. Am I getting through? I'm a little bit underslipped.
Andy, we love you. Thank you for coming on so early in the morning after you.
Cool shirt. Is that a commercial product?
What?
Cool t-shirt. Is that a commercial product that you're, or is that a one-off?
No, that's the Pocket Show. You'll have
very good.
You want to go to the Pocket Show because we have an iOS user, an Android user, and a Windows user all on the show together, and
they're all stranded on an island. One gets voted off every week to determine the end.
No, actually, mobility. if there was a show that was going to result in a fight, it would be the Pocket Show, because we really have thrown the smorgasbord in there. All we've got to do is chuck in a BlackBerry user and it could really set off.
Let's say if you're going food shopping and nobody knows what that logo means, they just see like a decolored version of the UK logo and the word pocket, what do they imagine that means?
I don't know, but I've got one that says big on it, and I usually get a few looks when I'm wearing that one.
If only you could find a BlackBerry user who could start a fight, Will Green.
Wait, Will Green? Yeah.
Will could do that. Also, Andy and Atku, if you hadn't already guessed, how you doing, pal? Great to see you again. I haven't seen you in ages.
Good to see you again, too. Thank you.
We must get you on more often. I forget to invite you more than anything, which is stupid.
I'd like to get it on with you as well, Ewan, but perhaps they should do that off camera.
Well, if you came to Macworld, maybe we could have. What were you doing, mate, that you were riding the overnight train back from New York?
I wish I had something like more hip to say than there was this opera with this singer that I wanted to see. Because Amtrak has a 2:40 a.m. train back to Boston, it's like I can either like get a hotel room, or I can just have a very, very late night and like save the $230 and just, you know, spend that money inside my own home. And I decided to spend it in my own
Am I right in saying, because I mean, when you say you get the cross-country train from New York to Boston, that sounds like quite a romantic journey. All I've got in my head is White Christmas, Bing Crosby, Danny Kaye. And sitting in the dining car looking at the fantastic scenery, or is it a hellhole?
Actually, the northeast corridor is the route that I take. It actually hugs like the coastline of New England, and because I like to get like a lot of New York for my money, I will take like the 7 a.m. train, and you get to see like sunrise over the Atlantic and the rocky coasts and all the boats and stuff like that. It actually is pretty cool, and because Amtrak is not necessarily the most popular way for Americans to travel anywhere, you spend a very small amount of money for one seat and you get the entire bench pretty much to yourself. So I have not flown from Boston to New York in about 10 years. There's just no point.
One day, Andy, I'll come and do that journey with you, because that'll be uber cool.
We will do a minor BBC documentary, Great Railway Journeys of the Lower Northeast Sub Corridor.
Great Railway Journeys between Boston and New York. With Andy,
am I the only one?
The club car serves up a very nice microwave breakfast sandwich. I'll tell you that. You know,
I'll bring a hip flask as well, though. Don't worry. Beneath him, it's Adam. How you doing, pal?
Oh, hey, I'm doing good.
Were you excited on Monday? Were you pleased with your options for the watch?
Yeah, I feel like I'm on Hollywood Squares.
Oh, everyone says that. Yeah, Andy's above you.
Doc.
Don't poke him. next to him, Chuck Latournis. How you doing, pal?
I'm great. Ewan, how are you?
Excellent. Glad you could join us. And you're going to join us on a more regular basis now.
I am. Thank you very much for the invitation. I'm looking forward to it. I always have a great time here. So, yeah, I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, no, shooting the breeze, having fun, taking the mickey. And last but by no means least, new boy, bend over, six of the best coming your way. Now, how do you pronounce your surname, Dave? Because I don't want to get it wrong.
Kalo. It's been Americanized over the generations.
Right. Dave Kalo of Apple World Today.
That's right.
How's Apple World Today going?
Apple World Today is a youngster, still in diapers.
So
at
you must
this
be
stage.
Nearly a month old.
It's, yeah, I think we're at 6 weeks or something like that, crazy. So it's going pretty well so far.
Excellent. You'll be on solid food before you know it.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that day.
Excellent. Oh, brilliant. The week in Apple then. So we've had the keynote. And what's the overall impression of the keynote? I've got to say, my criticism I said last night was, I thought they got a bit formulaic. I thought it was kind of like, say something cool, get someone out, have a Johnny getting an erection video, and then move on. And it just...
Don't forget the awkward guest.
The awkward guest.
Kirstie, yeah, Kirstie the awkward forced interaction with some celebrity. You know, a la you two, and then Kirstie Turlington.
Yeah, Tim Cook did look like he had to be briefed who Kirstie Turlington was before.
I was just disappointed they didn't do the finger touch thing.
What, with Kirstie Turlington? Yeah,
thing. Well, then it needs to be a thing now, though. Since they're going to do that same bit, apparently, at each keynote.
Right, yeah. Okay. My point was that I was disappointed that Kirstie Turlington didn't take the chance to go to Tim and say, tell you what, Tim, why don't you run the next one with me? And he couldn't have said no, yes. Could he? On the marathon front. He'd have, absolutely. He'd have had to go, yes. She's missed a chance there. She was way too polite. Way too polite.
You know what Tim would have done, though, right? He would have just hired a couple of Apple employees to sit underneath him and run. It would have been like, you know, he's in a rickshaw or something.
Yeah, it would have been, security-wise, it would have been easier for Obama to run the next one with her than...
did it make any...
Go on.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, did it make anybody else uncomfortable, you know, the whole thing with the HBO guy, too, reading the teleprompter?
He was shit.
Yeah.
Was he reading? I couldn't tell if he was reading. Was he reading? Or just staring at the floor during his presentation?
It was like a throwback to the old AT&T CEO during the iPhone presentation where he read his speech off index cards.
When they pulled back to the crowd, I was actually looking to see an 18-year-old intern with a big poster board with marker written what he had to say, just holding one at a time.
Oh, God. We're living up to every negative stereotype of Apple fans where it's like, let's say it's a tech event in which executives and engineers are demonstrating new products. And we're upset that, you know, I wasn't feeling the way he was saying that. I believe he read that off of a prompter as opposed to letting it feel wellspring from his soul about how he feels about this deal.
Well,
but you know, yeah, we're spoiled, good call. Because we're spoiled, Andy. Because Apple traditionally does these things so well. And when you compare it to these other, you know,
it's delivery information. Also deliver things like we are would. We going to say what that like the way that Apple executives present is just so like, we honestly think that the box that the iPhone comes in is the greatest box we've ever made.
Here's pause, a 3-minute pause, video pause, about pause,
pause, smile, hold up box. Tim, don't read that aloud. That's just on the prompter. Trip. God damn it.
You've got to admit that the level of the iPhone or the level of the Apple keynote is a lot of cool, super fantastic, gorgeous. It's not exactly hard to gush, is it?
You don't need a prompt. Well, and I always laugh when they say it's the best whatever we've ever made. Well, if it wasn't better than the last one, I'm guessing you probably wouldn't have introduced it at this event, right?
We phoned this one in because we're all very, very tired.
Well, you know, I'm glad that Andy's here to defend me from yesterday, because I was kind of going on about, okay, I will admit it's definitely more boring than it used to be, but the information is put out better than almost any other company out there does it. But Apple has raised the bar so high that now we get a little bit ticked off to them when, you know, they say don't pull back a 2007 iPhone presentation, which to the end of days will always be the best keynote ever landed, probably. So at this point, they have a hard time living back up to that. But at the same token, if you watch the latest stuff that comes out of, say, like Google or like Samsung or anybody else, it's still the best out there.
Well, the one thing I would say, though,
but do we care about entertainment? Also, there's lots of negative things you could, or you can make a lot of fun of the way that Samsung like does their presentations, but it's like at their Mobile World Congress event launching the Samsung Galaxy S6, you're like, now what? Here's one idea that they did not steal from Apple: having actual female executives as part of the presentation.
There you go.
Because it's like a big deal. It was so weird to think that, my God, they actually had Christy Turlington. They let a woman on that stage and actually let her talk. Okay, she doesn't work for the company, but okay, isn't that interesting for an Apple keynote?
Absolutely.
I did want to see Angela. I know I can't be alone. Yeah. I really wanted to see Angela come out and do her thing. But that just means, that doesn't mean that she may not be stage frightened. Well, my
stage
God.
Work may
it's
not 4:30, be her thing.
5:30.
That's exactly it. I just, my thing was, it wasn't boring because, I mean, it had a good pace to it. I think they've just got to watch the formula thing. I think, that could be very tiring very quickly, and they don't need to do that. That's the sad part. They don't need to get into that formula thing. They just need to, keep the pace going as it is and keep the information exchange relevant.
I'm kind of done with the Johnny Ive videos, to be honest.
Yeah,
with you.
Exactly.
I mean, they're very nicely done, but it's always Johnny, in his lovely British accent, saying things in a way that makes it seem much more important than what Tim just said, but it's always the exact same stuff, just packaged very nicely. Either Johnny, get some coaching and be willing to go out on stage, or let's just cut him off. And, did anybody think that Johnny's voice was about an octave deeper than usual? It seemed like he was becoming the British Barry White to me.
It was. It was. Some focus group told him that speaking a little bit more 50 Shades of Ives would allow more people to pay attention. I definitely thought it was a little cheesy. And I will have to say, Chuck, you said exactly what Ewan said while we were live. It's not that that Johnny's bad. It's just that they do it over and over again. And they did it for stuff that they didn't need to do it for.
Yeah. No. If I had to criticize the keynote, the only thing was, watch the formula chat, because that's going to get tiring very quickly. Otherwise, the pace was excellent. They kept moving. There was tons of stuff coming forwards, which is great.
Yep.
And I think are they really there to entertain us?
Yes.
Otherwise, why have a keynote? Did it have to become a form of entertainment?
Dude, the stage was the stage was the clue. You hire a stage, you'd better be saying something that's worth saying. And that people want to listen to. And making people want to listen to you is entertainment. I get a few emails each week that suggest that that's not what we do here. But that's what it is. You hire a stage. You want to put on a show for someone. A show is entertainment. It has to be entertaining. Otherwise, people just go, blimey, that was like Windows.
Well, and they've brought it on themselves, right, to a certain extent. I mean, a press event used to be, you get a couple of people in a hotel conference room. You don't televise it, certainly. You don't stream it. So, Apple likes the spotlight. Apple likes the events, and they're live streaming these things. They live blogged their own event this time, which I thought was interesting. I think they open themselves up to that kind of scrutiny and criticism if they're going to package it that way.
I think the direct comparison is the NBA draft, the NFL draft. The the NFL draft, if you go back 30 years, the NFL draft was closed doors, I think. Sort of 20 years ago, they started broadcasting it, and it was a TV event, and now it is massive. You've got thousands and thousands and thousands of people watching. There's a huge stage at Radio City. There's people brought on. There's queued lines. There's teleprompters. It is entertainment. And yes, all it is someone going, can I have that bloke, please?
part of that is fantasy football, though, because there are a lot of people that are there. Their entire years are going to be based around who can they pick and whatever. I don't play fantasy football, so I don't know, but I'm always amazed when I meet people who do this. That's like, I'm sorry, I can't make it. Then that's when I have to make my picks for whatever. It's like, really? But your fake football league? No. I'm serious. There's a guy in my league, Johnny L. He's going to be awake at 3:01 a.m. He's going to be just waiting for someone to blow out a knee. I'm like, okay. Have fun. But yeah, I just think that,
but you realize it is your child's bar mitzvah, right?
But you're absolutely right that it's like a stupid thing to, like, all they're doing is they're picking players, and it should not be a televised event. and it's not the same thing as what Apple does, what other companies do, but it's like, I really, really wish we could go back to the idea where we're putting the focus on what are they making and why do they make the decisions that they chose to make, as opposed to let's have this 90-minute televised event. I'm surprised we haven't seen a red carpet, especially for this, especially for the new fashion component of Apple today. Yeah. Like there's the 45-minute e-channel, like red carpet pre-show for the Apple event.
Yeah, no. See, eventually they'll be inviting in Tom Cruise, Richard Gere, all the A-listers will be coming in, and the geeks will be at the back of the line. They're going, no, psst.
But there's only one person they could have asked, who are you wearing? Christy was the only woman involved.
Yeah, true. Now, there's a great point in that the sex divide there was not good. Let's start off with some positive research, Kit. I thought, huzzah, Apple. There is nothing I will say negative about ResearchKit and what you're talking about in what they launched and the fact that it's open source. I mean, that could completely change the way that medicine's done if the FDA doesn't get in the way.
Yeah, and it already is to a certain extent, right? I think one research institution, I apologize, I can't remember who it is, they announced that we're 5 days out from the announcement, and they already had 1 million people sign up for a research study through ResearchKit. And, you know, they said it would have taken them years to get to that level prior to this.
Jeez.
So that's wonderful.
That is brilliant.
Yeah, that plus HealthKit. These are, I've been running up my event coverage all week long, and I wound up writing a lot more about HealthKit and ResearchKit than I did about the watch, because frankly, I do think that those two frameworks are more interesting than Apple Watch at this juncture. I mean, how do you top? You have a fancy gadget for your wrist, and there are good things or bad things, but it's just a gadget. Here are the bullet items on HealthKit and ResearchKit is. One of them tries to save and extend an individual human lives. The other tries to cure all diseases, possibly. Now, let's talk about the case materials and the new watch gadget, shall we?
Yeah, no, that's true. Very true. Very true.
I definitely think ResearchKit is one of the most amazing things, because I mentioned yesterday in the show, I've been a lifelong asthmatic, and you know, I've always thought that's something that can go away, and something a lot of people don't know. Back in 2007, I had a minor stroke, maybe about killed myself. And luckily, you know, I survived with very little damage, but now it's something that my blood pressure and my asthma and my breathing and all that is something I have to pay a lot of attention to. And so I kind of think that ResearchKit is one of the things that would be able to help, because recently, you know, I've been making some changes as far as diet or whatever, and I've been able to back off of some of those ridiculous meds that would literally have you walking around in a daze half the time. And so anything that can, you know, make medicine better, make health better, and, you know, go out there and cure what is not, I want to say it's a debilitating disease, but it's definitely irritating to have to control, you know, what one does on an everyday basis in order to live a sort of a semi-normal life. And if this is something that can be picked up through data fed back through the phone, I'm all for it. And like, you know, the reports came out, you know, some people were saying they got more data in the last couple of days and they've gotten their whole trials. Yeah. That's impressive.
Mm. And think about how easy it is for customers to participate and deliver that data. One of the things was, you know, just launch the app and walk around for 20 seconds or whatever it was. It's so easy for people to participate in what's going to likely be important studies. And they have such a huge base of people who can participate. I agree with Andy. I think it was the most exciting part of the keynote. It's really amazing. And I'm really looking forward to what comes out of this.
I think the other thing that's quite interesting is the open source factor of it, because they've got this proprietary thing. Yeah, they're going to control what goes in and out of the App Store, I'm sure. But because it's open source, they've let people create their own slant on it. Whereas, you know, Google gathers a massive amount of health data just by searches, runny nose, bleeding feet, streaming ears or something like that. And they know when they can plan the spread of avian flu from Google searches. But it's, you know, you always feel with Google that they're doing it to try and sell you a medical advert on the back of it, rather than the fact that it's open source and the fact that you can do what you want with it, and gives research establishments the ability to come out with tailored apps for themselves to get them exactly what they want, rather than having to work through a whole pile of NDAs and dev requirements that just doesn't relate to the research that they want to do.
Yeah. There's some caution here, though, too, I think, that people aren't talking about either. I mean, it's great if it stays pure on the research side, but, you know, we have companies that are going to be looking at this, too, and sort of taking an interest. And I'm thinking of, you know, pharmacy companies and things like that. So, you know, it's great when it's on the research side, but what happens when people start looking at this as a potential profit? And I worry somewhat about the open source nature of it, because what happens if those people take that stuff and sort of mutate it, and does it reflect back on Apple or not? I don't know.
Well, the research data belongs to the research house that wrote the app for gathering it, I presume. So if you feel like you can't trust that research house, then you shouldn't submit your data. But I mean, there's going to be anonymity things in there, surely, from Apple.
Yeah, and I hope that's built into what the open source, you know, material is that's available. I have to think it is. You know, I can't imagine that Apple's going to release open source stuff that's going to allow for the collection of the private personal data.
Right, but I mean, how long to? I mean, if Pfizer writes a research app, you know, they, I mean, I would assume they're allowed to use ResearchKit just as well as a medical institution.
Well, you run the risk that British and American Tobaccos will write a research app, in inverted commas.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only downside of it, isn't it? That's the mutation of the utopian spirit from Apple.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to bring this up to be negative. I'm super thrilled about ResearchKit, but, you know, I think there's some questions, too, that we need to kind of ask.
There's some flags.
Yeah, but those are unrelated to ResearchKit. I mean, that's true of every app that is ever written. This is why that when there are debates about, you know, I don't use Google apps or services because, you know, Apple with Google, I'm the product. I'm like, oh wow, that's awesome. So you've got Ghostery installed on like all of your desktop browsers, and you don't use mobile browsers? Well, no. Okay, well, you've got about at least 17 trackers and add beacons on every single page that you visit, and you're giving away all of this information 10 times more valuable than what you'd be giving to Google, and you're not getting anything in return. So and unfortunately, that's just part of the atmosphere that we live in today.
Yeah. Well, and it could be great, too. I mean, maybe I do want to participate in a study from a pharmacy company. You know, maybe if we can get better drugs and better medicines out of this, too. I mean, there's advantages there.
Yes, definitely. Right, so first product then was the MacBook. Me and Doc are going to kind of sit back a little bit here. First impressions on the MacBook, chaps?
I like it because I know the specs are kind of wonky, but we haven't had them in the field to see exactly what it's like to use these on a day-to-day basis. And I think it's okay because Apple, they're really, really clear that this, if you're looking for a notebook that will be used the way that I use my MacBook Pro, which is it is my substitute for a desktop machine, or even something like a MacBook Air that's designed to be super compact, but can do pretty much anything you ask it to do, go elsewhere because this is not going to handle it for you. There are some people for whom I want the smallest, thinnest notebook possible, and I'm willing to trade some things off in order to get it. Mm-hmm. So whether or not it means that you can't type. The Microsoft Word can no longer keep up with your typing. Or the only real complaint about performance is that, oh my God, I can't use Final Cut Pro to edit 4K video on this. That might not be quite an issue. Also, I think that high performance is what more megapixels used to mean for camera marketing. Performance, I think, is for computer marketing right now. In that, you feel as though you're losing the plot and saying that because this does not have a processor that is powerful as something that something else, this must not be as useful a machine. I spent, as I was talking about earlier on, that I spent about 24 hours in New York I'm testing out a $60 Windows 8.1 tablet that has just the Intel Zero microprocessor on it. And I was running Scrivener on it in Windows mode, and it was keeping off my typing. It was working perfectly fine. I was willing to trade off a lot in order to simply get this $60 computer that fits my pocket but runs the same desktop apps that I use on the Mac side of things. So I'm not willing to dismiss it right away. If they were really trying to get things as small as possible, they almost certainly achieved that. And I think there are going to be people who are not going to be bothered by the fact that it's not, you know, an i5 or even an i3 processor in there.
Yeah, right? I think that's exactly the right way to look at it. And Apple is not saying this is the laptop for everybody. And I think there are a lot of people out there saying that if it's not the one for me, then it's a failure. I look at it as sort of a concept car. You know, Apple's kind of testing the waters, looking, being very forward-looking with this. It's a lot like the original Air, right? It wasn't as goosed up as what else was out there. It took out a lot of ports that people thought they were going to, you know, couldn't live without. You know, as I look at the laptop that I'm using right now, I'm using four ports right now. So the way I use a laptop, the new MacBook is probably not the right one for me, at least not now, but it is going to be right for a lot of people, and it allows Apple to really try things out, to introduce new technologies, to kind of force people or help people down the path of realizing that they probably don't need everything that they swear they need. Otherwise, we'd still have VGA ports in these things and, you know, SCSI ports on a laptop at this point. Apple's been very good about yanking stuff out that we think we couldn't live without, with including the original, you know, the floppy drive on the original iMac and optical drives on pretty much everything else now. So for a lot of people, this is going to be a super useful notebook for them, laptop for them. I called it a notebook. Look at that. You know, they're going to be able to take it out on a cross-country trip and maybe not even bring their power brick with them. I do that with mine now. So I think this is a good look at the future. We'll see how it works out. I don't think people need as much processing power as they think they do anymore for what they do. So unless you're really editing video or doing a lot of really horsepower intensive stuff, you know, most of us are surfing the web and you know, using, you know, text editors and that kind of stuff, and we're not really drawing all the power that we have in what's in the machines now. So I think this is it's a good look at the future, and people are going to have to get over it.
Well, let me come in with a kind of a bit of rational thought at the moment, though.
Wait, I thought you were going to stay out of this one.
No, I've stayed back. That's it. I'm in now. Andy, tag me in.
You got to hold it. You're not fair. You got to hold it because I'm biting my tongue right now.
Just one second, because the point is that this is supposedly replacing the plastic books. So now.
Well, who said that?
Well, you know, there's a theory.
In name only, I mean.
Yeah, okay. So hang on a second. So what you're getting here is, yes, you're getting the Retina display, which you're not getting in the Air range. But for a 13-inch MacBook Air, which is significantly more powerful, for $1,200, you can get...
I'm going to jump in on you on that, Ewan, because one thing that I don't think is fair about a lot of the people who are talking about this thing... Make sure you spec them out the same. So take that Air and put in the same flash and put in the same RAM, and they're priced almost identical.
No.
Yeah, config it.
Yeah, because I've got the config. For an extra $150, you get the Core i7 processor, which is way better. And I edit video on my little 11-inch.
Depending on what you want to do. Because you're saying you're editing video, yes. The trade-off is... I'm saying spec them out the same and your base pricing starts the same. So then the differences become on the MacBook, you get the Retina display with a lower gigahertz processor and a supposedly lower GPU. But as Andy said, I think earlier, we haven't seen any specs on this either. We don't know how they run. What are the comparisons?
The other point I made last night was I don't know if Apple is necessarily, and Apple doesn't, I admit, listening to the people that are out there using these small computers. I've got my 11-inch Air and I love it, and I love it, love it, love it, and I love it because I can treat it as a little tiny desktop if I want to and link it to a Thunderbolt display, or I can take it in my bag and it's really light and really easy to use and it's great for on the road. It's thin enough, it's light enough, it's got the connectivity that I want, it's fine. I don't need more than that is giving me. And Apple seems on this, Apple is adamant on this thinness path. And if we're brutally honest, I think there's a very large portion of us would go, do you know what? I think you've taken this a bit far, Chess, because I really couldn't give a stuff. This is as thin as I need it to be.
They didn't take the Air away either, and as a matter of fact, they revved it. So
yeah, no. I'm not. I'm just saying, is a policy decision. I think Apple is hurtling towards this thinness thing when actually most of us are sitting there going, do you know what? It's thin enough.
Look, I agree with you on so many points there. Because I think that Apple thinks that I do believe they believe that thinness is part of their design personality, which in the past has resulted in them doing some, I will go just flat out and say, make some bonehead design decisions. Like you look at the new iMac, they wanted to make a desktop computer thinner. And mm-hmm. what did they do in pursuit of that? They took the SD card slot and they had to put it in the back near the monitor, near the floor mount, and so that there's no way to reach it unless you actually spin the thing around. That's stupid. The things I don't like about my MacBook Pro is that it's thin, but it's not so thin that they couldn't have made it a little bit thicker and put it in an Ethernet port. It's not so thin that they couldn't have made it a little bit thicker and put an actual functioning power port on it. It's not so thin that they couldn't have made it a little bit thicker and given me a better keyboard, because this one is just not something that you find, I would expect on something with the word Pro on it. But I disagree only in the sense that this is a machine, the MacBook is designed specifically to be incredibly crazy thin, incredibly crazy light, incredibly crazy small. So long as this is not something that everybody is forced to buy, meaning as long as there are options in the Mac line, I don't have any issue with it. My worry would be that in three years from now, you can't get a MacBook that has more than one port on it. You can't get a MacBook that is thick enough that you can actually travel without any dongles on it. But for now, given that we have three different lines of MacBooks each for a specific kind of user, I have no problem with this new one.
Yeah, when did we become angry about too many options? You know, typically, most people are complaining that Apple doesn't give you enough options.
And here's one thing that I think no one really touched on, and that, well, to my recollection anyway, and I would like to touch on. For the longest time, we've been raving about, similar to the iPod, the iPad has been a gateway into the Mac space for people who've never owned the Mac. The only way that the company continues to move onward and upward is to continue to grow the install base. Every time they grow the install base by making something that's very usable for a lot of everyman people, us long-term users feel a little bit slighted. I kind of don't feel that way because I think the more people that are involved, the better tech that we can get out of it. So what's sort of happening is, if the iPad has been your gateway Mac and now you're realizing there's things that the pad operating system can do that a computer can do, what you basically have is a champagne or space black iPad with a keyboard and a little bit more power and a full file system and all of the things that turns it from tablet to computer. And for the people that fits that description, for the collegiates, for this very many people out there, I would say 90% of my clients would get on fine with this new MacBook, who in the past have been sort of forced to buy a MacBook Pro, or because they didn't want, you know, what looks like the little piddly machine, or they didn't think that the Air was quite big enough. So I think that there's a path that a lot of people haven't even spoke of, and that's to drag over the halo effect people. And it's a great machine for that.
Yeah, but my point would be, I think I'd have bought that for $200 less, even though I am getting the Retina display. But for $200, who cares?
Yeah, I think it's interesting to sort of put this in. Unfortunately, Apple is really in its own world for so many reasons, among them the fact that you can compare like this notebook to like Asus makes a notebook that's very similar to it. It's about as thin, it's a little bit heavier, but it has more ports to it. It's also a 13 and not a 12, but it doesn't run Mac OS. And so that's why it's hard to make comparisons outside of Apple. Also, we have a pretty good track record on how Apple tends to release things. That if it costs $1,300 right now and only has one port, it will probably cost $999 and have at least two USB-C ports in the next 2 years. You can't get around the fact that the first MacBook Air was just horrible on so many levels. Apple had the very, very bad fortune of sending me my loaner for review purposes like 3 days before I was going to leave for like a week-long conference, And I said, okay, guess what? You get to be thrown into a combat situation right away. And it was horrible. It couldn't keep up with like the basic things I needed to do. It had only one USB port at all. So, and only 64 gigabytes of storage. So all day long, I'm like taking pictures and I need to do things with them, but I can't even really efficiently take these pictures and put them onto an external hard drive because I would need one USB port for the import and one USB port for the actual hard drive because there wasn't enough internal space. And now it's the quote cheap unquote Mac at $899. So I do see all the problems that everyone else sees with this. I do think that I'm going to have to see it in the metal and actually use it for a month before I think about how useful it is or how not useful it is. But also, again, Apple gives us the biggest choice Apple gives us every single time is that, do you like this new Mac we did or not like it? Not like it? Okay. Do you not like it so much you're willing to switch to Windows? No? Okay, then. See it in 2 or 3 years when the world will catch up with our design and now you'll probably like it.
Yeah. You know what's going to be winner is when Monoprice gets USB-C stuff and everybody can stop complaining about the initial early entry Apple $30 adapters that only ever last for 6 to 8 months. And then once Monoprice and Amazon Basic get their hands on it and they're able to make cables correctly, that kind of goes away. And you don't care that they die faster because you can buy 8 of them for the cost of 1 of them.
Are we all satisfied that this one USB-C link is not a move from Apple to get away from Thunderbolt?
I was just going to ask that same question. I will say, after researching it a lot more since the keynote, that USB-C port is actually pretty interesting and somewhat impressive in my mind.
Very impressive. Yes, I'm with you, Adam. And you know what? I think if you can get things down to one smaller entry connector, but they could do a bunch of other stuff on the other end by using cables, not that much different from Thunderbolt in a certain extent, then why not? Because what you're able to do is, A, make even the cables smaller because Thunderbolt is way better than carrying around FireWire 800s. I don't even use those drives anymore because the cables are a pain in the butt in your bag, whereas Thunderbolt cables are easier to manage because they fold better and they take up less space and, you know, they plug in and out a little bit simpler. So, again, I'm just thinking that once Monoprice and the other guys get on this, it's going to be great. If that port can break out to do everything that, you know, so far I'm with Adam on what I've read, then I think that's the way to go.
As much as any of us on the panel, and I don't, may hate the new MacBook, you don't hate it as much as the Thunderbolt manufacturers who have been ramping up and expecting really big things to come out of Thunderbolt.
Oh God, Cal Digital just came out with a brand new super sexy little box. I read about it on this site called Apple World Today. It was viewed by this guy named Steve Sandy. He used to be my podcast host. And I was like, wow, Steve, I feel bad for the guys at Cal Digital. But to that extent, to what we all just ranted about for the last 30 minutes, it won't matter because the MacBook Pro guys will still need that. And for guys like us that do video or need some connectivity, it's there. But you definitely got to say the specs of Thunderbolt C, I mean, sorry, USB-C are pretty spot on to Thunderbolt, and it's going to be kind of hilarious.
I kind of feel like going on the Thunderbolt thing, those guys in some ways did it to themselves. I don't think Thunderbolt was ever really embraced the way that Apple had hoped it would have been by manufacturers. I think
shit,
still...
dude, you're talking in the past tense.
What?
You're talking in the past tense there. That scares the crap out of me. I'm invested. I'm invested to the tune of thousands of pounds.
Of course you are. And lots of people are. And I don't think you need to worry because I don't think Thunderbolt's not going away overnight. Right. And it's going to be around in the Pro line, I think, in the same way that FireWire 800 has been. I mean, we still have FireWire 800 on... Is it still on the Mac Mini or did it just end this last round?
I think it's gone, but okay.
Yeah, is it gone from the iMac as well?
I think it's gone, but I'll be stand corrected quite happily, and I will be corrected.
But how long did that take? I mean, that was a long, slow walk. So even if USB-C becomes the thing... you know, on the Pro side of things, I don't think Thunderbolt's going away overnight, but I do think it's probably on that FireWire 800 trajectory. So I think you could probably look at how long that stuck around how long it's going to be around.
Russ in the chat room is giving me a year.
Keep what you have, Ewan, but don't buy any new ones.
Yeah.
you know, one thing that's pretty impressive that I haven't used recently, and now that I switched over to Alpha and I've moved away from Canon, I don't even use my USB ports anymore to copy things over from my camera to my computer. I literally just press a button and the Alpha software sends everything to my Mac automatically. So I was thinking about a lot more things are starting to connect where they don't necessarily even need a port. And like, if it wasn't for us in podcasting, I don't think I would have much else plugged into this machine other than a monitor. Everything else that I primarily use now, most of it is done via wirelessly or through the Thunderbolt. So, I mean, we're kind of getting there. You know, we all had this argument when we went from serial port to USB and we went from taking out the CD drive or the floppy drive. And so it was noisy for like 6 months. After that, everybody started talking about it. And next thing you know, the Windows machines jumped on board and nobody even remembered that floppies even existed.
Yeah.
Well, the only thing I'll say is under this desk, I got 32 terabytes of 4 8 terabyte Thunderbolt drives. And so a year is scares the shit out of me, because that's £1,600 worth of well, no, it's more than that. It's £2,000 worth of drives alone under here. So it's
for all the adapters really seen for USB-C. I don't think Thunderbolt was one of them, was it?
Was what? No, I don't even think it's possible from the research that I've been doing.
Sorry,
but Here's the thing that should really worry you, Ewan, is if you go back and look at when Apple announced Thunderbolt, look at the number of announcements of products that happened immediately after that. And then look at, since they've launched the MacBook, there has been so many products that are like, yep, we're going to have USB-C, we're going to have USB-C, we're going to have USB-C. It's like crazy.
Windrider,
stuff I've been seeing across my stream.
Windrider in the chat room says, USB-C transfer speed is quarter that of Thunderbolt 2. And I heard as well, before we finish that bit, that because of the Core M chip, Thunderbolt 2 won't work with Core M. But I don't know if that's true or not. But there you go.
It's the processor, not just the... When I was doing the research on USB-C, it just sounds like it's just not part of what USB-C can handle.
Yeah, no, according to what I heard, the Core M chip won't take a Thunderbolt connection, so you can't even make an adapter for it.
But that's just the processor that's in the MacBook. So, I mean, if that was accurate, that would mean if they brought a USB-C port to a different Intel chip, that there's potential?
There is potential for an adapter, yeah.
There we go. So I hadn't seen that research yet. But in terms of the data transfer rate, USB-C is up to 10 gigabits per second, which I believe is Thunderbolt 1 speed.
Yeah, cool. All right.
And it is bi-directional and all that other fun stuff.
We had a question, just to finish this off, on the MacBook from Batwinch. She says, this relates to the 12-inch Mac. I know it's only 5 watts, but how are they going to keep it cool enough without a fan? The batteries themselves will generate a lot of heat, as well as the processor, etc. And I also love to know, where the hell's the power transformer? She didn't see it. And it is a fine old little tiny space. And from an engineering shiz viewpoint, they've done an amazing job at the batteries to come up with this idea of segregation and compartmentalization of to get something so small and get 9 hours of battery life out of it. But there is as soon as they said they were taking the fan away, my first question was, really? I mean, they've got to be able to do it, but I mean, is it just, have they got slots in the side where it leaks out, or are we presuming it just doesn't generate?
They've obviously never run flash on the thing then, I think. you run flash on it, and without the fan, you can pop popcorn on top of it.
I
was thinking the same thing. I really want to have this thing and, use it on my lap for an hour and see if I can feel the heat through my jeans or not. I'm quite curious to see how that is in the real world.
That's a whole different show, Dave.
I meant like my knee area.
It'd
be really interesting to see how it dissipates the heat. And I'm thinking that something about tearing it the way that they are tearing it may help with some of the heat dispersion. The bodies have always been really good at helping to get some of that heat out of there without getting too hot. But yeah, I'm curious of what the adapter looks like as well. Because in the past, whenever people miniaturized drives and stuff, what you would end up is this brick that sits on the floor or connects to the wall that took all the power. So I'm really curious to see that.
I think they have an image of it on the store. I want to say it just looks like the air charger with the, you know, the little square, the 45 watt one.
Yeah, I think that's
correct. Seemed to be about that size.
No, good question about bench. I mean, they wouldn't have released it if they hadn't done some bench testing of it. So, I mean, that's you know, you've got to trust to the fact that it will work. But it is alarmingly good, should we say. Right, watch. Thoughts on the watch. I've been debating whether I'm going to buy one or not, and I kind of settled on the fact that I wasn't. And then I measured my wrist at 22 centimeters, and I'm not. Because I only go up to 21.5, so... there we go. That's me out of the market.
What?
My wrist is 22 centimeters. And
you're talking this is the band?
Yeah, and the only one I can get is a classic band, which is the steel, which doesn't start till 500 quid.
Oh, but there's going to be a million, gazillion third-party bands.
Third-party bands already. Well,
when they come, fair enough, but Apple can shove $500 for a watch that may not tell the time in 2 years up their arse. And
that's how you really feel.
Yeah, no. The one thing I said last week was that they've got to deal some way with obsolescence. And I got shouted down by it. I've got emails from me telling me that I was wrong. But they didn't deal with obsolescence. They didn't say, okay, look, you know, this is not a watch. This is a communicator. This is the Apple communicator. This is giving you so many different ways you can interact with your phone that are just mind-blowingly good. And they are. There is some cool shiz here. But they need to stand up and say, but... when the watch has finished doing that job and we're on to the next level in a couple of years, the watch will still tell the time. Because one of the things it said was it's an incredibly accurate timepiece. And I think that's going to go through real problems in the UK with advertising standards because the watch is not keeping the time. My Pebble watch hadn't been updated for 6 weeks. It was 8 minutes out on the correct and accurate time. So this thing, I can't believe it is an accurate timepiece in of itself.
Well, I thought that was... Go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, I got to get my joke in, Andy. Sorry.
No.
They gave you the how to deal with obsolescence right at the top of the keynote. It's called Apple Pay.
It's accepted in more than 700,000 retailers.
Oh, thanks.
Sorry, Andy. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Andy.
No, I just I was going to start with a lame joke and go and proceed with a lame observation, but it's like I did think that was a curiously off tone thing for Tim to say. It's like it's the most accurate timepiece. It's accurate to within 50 milliseconds, and like, yeah, Tim, because that's why people are buying this, for the accuracy of the time. Like, if you've ever been more than 50 milliseconds late for an appointment, you won't be able to blame your watch anymore, sir. But I mean, I do think that obsolescence sort of is not an issue here. I've got some problems with the Apple Watch, but that's not one of them, chiefly because, again, you take a look at what Apple has done in the past, where I think the Apple phone is an ample precedent for this, where there was no way, no how, that the first generation Apple phone was going to be useful a year or two from now. Really, it's the thing that the not just early adopters, but early believers are going to want to buy, because they can't picture not having one of these, even though you compare it to the cheapest BlackBerry, the cheapest Windows phone, the cheapest Trio or Handspring, and you see, well, it doesn't have even a basic camera, it doesn't have cut, copy, and paste, it doesn't have this, it doesn't have apps, and you know that it's not going to get a camera via a software upgrade. And you also suspect, if you've been following these sort of things for a while, even when new operating systems and new features do arrive, it's probably going to require a machine with more RAM than whatever is built into that thing. So I don't think that's quite so much an issue as other people think. It's more like, can they deliver something that provides a compelling experience to the people who use it? And I don't think that Apple necessarily messed up that presentation, but I thought they also made some weird choices. In that, I can only go by my experience of wearing this Moto 360. It has not been off my wrist since September. I had to wear it for a month because I was writing a review, but after it's like, I just didn't want to not have this. So I had to actually go and buy one because I liked it. And the thing that makes this such a useful watch to me is that it's never about me deciding, hey, I'm bored, I wonder what's on my watch. And it's never, I want to initiate something, I'll do it from my watch. It's usually my phone getting my attention to something through the screen that's a lot more convenient for me to access, where just sort of magically this watch understands that, oh, well, if you're taking a walk and you're listening to your podcast app, I bet that you're going to want to have player controls on that audio player handy, so you don't have to take out the phone to do that. I don't have to launch anything. I don't have to swarm through this constellation of different app icons. Just underneath the time, there is a playback control deck. And there's so many different ways that Android Wear really presents itself that way. I thought that it was kind of odd that Apple chose to do, it was an interesting demo of, hey, my daughter text messages me because she's locked out of the house and she wants me to open the garage door. And so I'll send her a reply back and I will open the garage door for her. And I understand the, okay, honey, hang by, I'll have it open for you in just a jiffy. And then after that, you take out your phone, launch whatever smart home app you have that controls everything, select the portal or the whatever it is you want to unlock and move, and then move it that way. What I don't understand is I'm going to go like this for, with my phone in my pocket, mind you, I'm going to prefer to go like this for a good like 10 or 15 seconds, find the app, and then find like the actual control. If I've got enough money that I have all this stuff around, I probably have more than one like remote controlled camera door. So, okay, select that door. Okay, now select the open thing. It seems they didn't make the case that this is going to be easier than just doing it via a phone app. Whereas you could make a demo, at least with what's shipping with Android right now, that this is not something you, if we feel as though if you ever think to yourself, I'm bored, I'm going to mess around with my watch, we totally failed. This is supposed to be a wristwatch, meaning that you turn your wrist towards yourself to get one piece of information. For 100 years, that piece of information has been, what time is it? Now it can be broader things than that.
Yeah.
Which is not to say that Apple has screwed up the presentation or they screwed up Apple Watch itself. It's just that this was their second opportunity to really make that case that here's what we think a wrist top should be. Here's what we think is appropriate use case for this stuff. And I don't think they really teed off on that ball yet.
I think the title's wrong. It shouldn't have been an Apple Watch. It should be called the Apple Communicator, or have been called the Apple something, which really captures the imagination of the fact that this isn't just a watch, most definitely. And I think they'd have had less resistance on that kind of stuff. But you know, I think they have to deal with the idea of the fact that this thing has got a shelf life, and people need to know what that is. And the thing that I find the stupidest of all. And I think nothing has divided the Apple community more than the Apple Watch, because I've got people that I know are serious fanboys who have written to me going, not a chance, I'm not going to buy it. I think Apple have made a massive mistake. This is a solution that's looking for a problem. It's nowhere near what it should be.
Well, you know what happens, though.
And I've got people that have also said, well, yeah, okay, but why on earth would you buy the $10,000 one when the $350 one does exactly the same thing? And the other one if it's not just through sheer ostentatiousness, and the other people have said,
don't underestimate the power of sheer ostentatiousness.
Well, ostentatiousness. Andy, what's the correct word?
I don't know. I kind of tuned out when you said $18,000 watch.
Yeah. Okay. So
I am therefore a normal consumer.
Yeah. No. I think forget my opinion. The opinions of the people that have been writing to me this week are massively divided, and it's not fanboy versus non-fanboy, because some people have written to me who are nowhere serious fanboys, and they've just said, no, not interested.
Yeah. Ostentation. This is one product that I think we need to look beyond Apple community in order to figure out where it's going to go, because this is not a product for the Apple community. And it goes back to, I wanted to play devil's advocate on a point Andy made back when he was talking about obsolescence and the expectations from the original iPhone. When the original iPhone came out, we were talking about a customer base of, maybe tens of millions. And it was primarily tens of millions of Mac users who were used to dealing with Apple, at least at first, and maybe had some more tolerance for the shortcomings of a version 1 product. But now we're talking about an installed user base of hundreds of millions of people who don't look at the iPhone as an Apple product, a geek tech product. This is their phone. This is it's a consumer product, and I don't know that they're going to have the same kind of tolerance for obsolescence and version 2 of the Apple Watch coming out with a lot more features now that suddenly makes their version 1 obsolete. I'm not sure where it's going to go yet, but I think it's a different situation.
And I think in terms of should they have called it Apple Watch or should they have called it Apple Communicator or something, I think they went, I mean, this isn't really a phone. It's a little tiny computer that goes in my pocket and it just happens to make phone calls. But people know the term watch. And I think, like Chuck just said, it isn't something just for the Apple community primarily. This is something that's for absolutely everybody. And people understand watch. Oh, I wear this thing on my wrist and it's a watch and I know what that is. And that seems to make more sense, I think, to the potential pool of customers. So I think that's why they went with watch. Whether it really is a watch, well, it has a watch function, but it does all this other stuff too. My iPhone does make phone calls, but I use it for phone calls significantly less than I use it for absolutely everything else. And I just to go back to something Andy said earlier, I also wish that Apple had emphasized that sort of, like you were describing, like that the thoughtful, intelligent consideration of the situation you're in and then delivering just the information or function that you want. Like, you know, I notice you're walking, listening to music, here's controls. I wish that was emphasized during the keynote as well.
And you know, Dave, I made almost the exact same points yesterday, and the fact that the only reason why they called it a watch is because it is something that human beings can label automatically in their head and reconcile with the data that they already have. We went through these exact same conversations with the phone, and we went through the exact same it's not for me conversations with the iPad, but the iPad has been a runaway success. And the phone is a little bit easier. Everybody sort of needed a mobile phone, but the iPad is something that no one technically actually really needs, but everyone has found a great use case for. And there's many people who have bought them and hasn't found a good use case for, which is starting to show up maybe in some of the decline of the sales, but there's still a big enough market out there to make it a viable product. And if you really want to go crazy with Apple reaching for something that they didn't need to reach for, but it's turned out to be a very nice reach, and that would even be the Apple TV, an attempt to set off the Apple set-top box. It wasn't for a whole bunch of people, but 30 million units later, it was a very nice guess, you know, or what they used to call a hobby that we still make fun of. So I see that two things that have been driving me nuts about the coverage of the watch. Many of the people have automatically alluded to the very expensive version, forgetting that a $350 version exists. And if you do what's always been done, the original Apple TV was expensive and somewhat useless. The original iPhone was expensive, unsubsidized, and not useless, but not what it is today. And I mean, we're talking about a Rev 1. If it's not for you to do Rev 1, then don't do it. As a tech journalist, I feel like I kind of want to. I've always wanted to get to this since I was a little kid watching Dick Tracy. So like, I don't mind, you know, throwing $350 at it. And in theory, if it fits me the way that I think it will, I will turn right around a couple weeks later and go buy the $1099 version that I really like. And as far as people going on and on about the expensive one, I pulled up a thing yesterday to show some friends because they kept like yapping, and I was showing them there's places where you can go in New York to get a $9,000 to $20,000 dessert. We're talking something that you eat in a period of about 5 minutes. And if you don't read the Rob report, then don't wear an $18,000 watch. But don't fool the people that can afford to do so. No,
the discussion on price, because the discussion on price is about comparatives with other Swiss watches and that kind of stuff. It's not to do with the fact that there are people out there who are stupid enough to spend that kind of money on nothing. I just want to say that I think I've forgotten what I was going to say now. So go ahead.
Can I respond to that just briefly?
Yeah,
it's like, I would stop well short of calling people stupid for buying the solid gold version of the watch. I too don't understand the value of it, but my only real opposition to it is that it's not a gold watch. It is a gold version of something that could be made out of anything. It's to my mind, it's like you have the Casio G-Shock watch that's made out of plastic. And Casio will also make, let's say they also make a $17,000 version where they take the exact same molds, but they pour gold in it. And now this is the gold version. It says that there's nothing intrinsically about the design of this watch that says it must be made out of gold. I feel that that's the way I feel about the design of the Apple Watch, is that it's the gold version is not special. It's just a gold one of those. And so I won't insult anybody who A, has the money to buy it and also wants to have it. But that's my difficulty in trying to understand the purpose of this device.
That's exactly the problem I have, Andy, and I think that's a great point. And it's that it is the $350 watch made out of gold instead. So maybe that justifies, validates a $2,000, $3,000 price tag on it. But it just feels, for the first time to me, that Apple is doing what they've been accused of for so long, and that's just overpricing something just because people are willing to pay for it.
Yeah.
Because there is no extra precision that goes into the manufacturer of the components of the gold watch. It's the $350 watch that's made out of gold instead of aluminum. And it just, I don't know, it seems kind of crass to pump the price up to $10,000 for it, you know, that far beyond what the difference in manufacturing would make the price. Yeah.
Just rubs me I, the don't, wrong I don't, way I don't necessarily disagree. I'm sorry, I'm interrupting other people.
I'm going to just come back at a point that Booker is making in the chat room. He says, why does someone spending their money make them stupid? And that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is I think that in a world where people do not understand the value of what they earn against the value of what they spend and the difference that it makes to real people, I think that spending $8,000 on a dessert, yes, I understand that there's probably ingredients in there that are fantastic, but there is no dessert on the planet that is worth $8,000. There is no watch on the planet that is actually worth $30,000 unless someone has painstakingly hand-built this thing, which is what you're getting with Swiss watches. Not some grunt in China who's getting paid next to nothing to assemble it for you, or someone in Arizona who's getting paid next to nothing to assemble it for you. You're talking about a craftsman who has spent a lifetime learning how to build a Swiss watch and manually puts it together and charges you $10,000 for the price. That is a value which is acceptable against the charged price.
Right.
This is not. This is someone getting a molded casing, regardless of what it's molded out of, taking a bog standard part, dropping it in and sealing a back on it. That is what really offends me in the extreme. There are people in my street who don't earn £350 a week, and there's people spending $8,000 on a watch that's no different from a $351, and Apple's pocketing the money when it's already a massive financial sump for the world's resources, and it's killing America on the basis that it won't bring any of it back in because it's going to get charged too much tax on it. I'm sorry, there is a bigger argument than this, and there is a certain stupidity that goes along with that from all parts. But there, I've got my soapbox out and underway.
That's fine. No, that is an excellent point, especially when you contrast it to the message that Apple tries to send through its advertising, where here is slow motion videos of what will your verse be today? Meanwhile, they are selling this super, super luxury thing that whose value is kind of hard to understand. I mean, I've been, this is no joke. I've spent this entire week developing a column that's going to publish next week, in which I do nothing but try to sort out my own feelings about the valuation of the watch and trying to hammer at my own reactions, which are negative, and trying to unwrap those. I have to point out some things in my own house where there is a stupid mass manufactured decorative item that was in the 1970s. It probably sold at Sears Roebuck for about $8. It's if you find it in a Goodwill shop or a Salvation Army shop, it'll probably cost you $5. It's just cheap mass produced plaster, and I paid like $80 or $90 for it on eBay. I attached a value for it that no one else would understand because it was one of these was on the mantelpiece of my childhood home for years and years and years. And then when my parents passed away and people were packing up the house, it got smashed to smithereens, so no one got to take it. So I was willing to spend $80 for this really $5 item. Sometimes value is completely intangible. It's emotional. It's irrational.
Totally agree.
And we can't explain it. And you do desperately hope that you never have to tell. You're never really put up on that witness stand to explain. Here's why I decided to spend this much money on something that nobody else would see 2 cents worth of value in. I don't think that's directly applicable to a $17,000 version of a $350 watch.
I agree.
But it does indicate that it's possible for someone to simply say, I know that other people don't react to this, the styling or the beauty of this. To me, this is the most beautiful watch I've ever seen. I don't even care about technology. I thank God I have the sort of income where I can afford to buy things I like, and I like this when buying it. And I have to respect that.
Yep. And you know, Andy, I was going to bring that up because I wanted to bring this up yesterday, and nobody here, nobody around, I thought would understand it. But like, in theory, what would you pay right now for a mint condition Superman 1? I mean, I think the going price is like 830 quid for something that was a 10 cents when it came out. You know what I mean? And that was mass produced and printed, but I mean, it is rare. And so there's, look at artwork. This is no different than artwork, except for maybe it's mass produced, but we don't even know how many they produce. They've never said, we've only made 1,000 and this is what you're going to get. We've only made 10,000.
Let's not confuse rarity of old items with a mass produced Apple Watch.
I'm talking about value. There are people who would say that spending $750,000 on a comic book is crazy, but I know that if I had the money, I would. I know Scott McCloud would. I know Eddie Anaco would.
No, let me finish, man. Let me finish.
I'm more of a Marvel guy.
Let me finish. We're not talking about something of rare value. We are not talking about something of emotional value. Why is there no gold-colored version, which is not the gold watch? Because Apple knew damn well one would ever buy the gold watch if they did do one.
No, that's 100% true. That is a totally fair point.
Last week, Motorola actually, this week, they released a gold tone version of their Moto 360 watch. It looks beautiful. I honestly think it looks prettier than the actual gold Apple Watch edition. But again, it comes down to, what do you think? I can't rationalize. I love if my dream car is your basic fleet Ford car, your basic Crown Victoria. I think they're beautiful cars, and they're cop cars, they're taxis, and that's actually the reason why I think they're beautiful, and that's the reason why if I could spend any amount of money on a car, that would probably be like the first one I would get. It's irrational and you can't explain it, and though it's you're certainly entitled, you and I are both certainly entitled to think what we want to think about $70,000 gold watch popped out of the same mold as the $350 one, but I think there should be some sort of hard limit to how we judge that, because I can't defend so many of my own purchases. The amount, you know, the extra $70 I spent on that piece of bric-a-brac, cheap sentimental bric-a-brac,
give that
to a food bank, and that could have fed a family for a couple of weeks.
No, I agree.
So it's hard for me to justify
things. Emotional value, I don't have a problem with. Rarity, I don't have a problem with.
Yeah, but that's I think that's the point I'm getting at. The person doesn't have to justify, just say, well, that's emotional value, or I'm justifying it because, oh, look, all the craftsmanship that went into this, or I'm justifying it because look at the rarity of this thing. They should not have to explain why they like the things that they like.
No, I tend to buy things knowing that I'm not getting ripped off. I won't allow Ellis or my children to wear Nike trainers. They are not having them.
I agree. You know, I'm not disparaging anybody. If you want to spend your $10,000 on the watch, then that's fine. I think disappointment maybe is targeted more at Apple, because previously I think everything you bought at Apple, you were paying for the value. And if you paid more for it, it was because you were getting more out of the product. And for the first time, I think that ratio has kind of gotten blown out of the water.
And the people who are making it are not benefiting as craftsmen for that.
Mm. They're benefiting as a company, though. And I think people... I don't like it when we sort of lose sight that Apple has to be somehow, or when we start to say things that make it feel like we feel that Apple is somehow not a corporation out to make as much money as they can. And here is an opportunity, and they've seized it, and it's egregious to some, maybe. Had they put out the limited edition watch, and it was $3,000, right? What would it, the minute it hit the secondary market and you couldn't get your hands on one, what would it be going for on eBay?
Yeah.
True.
10.
True.
15, yeah, 20.
Maybe, but I just want to throw something back at you.
And that's profit Apple's not getting, right? So I think they're looking at it like, you know, we made this thing and we're gonna take our profit on it.
But you know, the difference is Apple's never been the company. Sorry, I interrupted you. Company that made as much money as it can. And I think it's always made a point of saying that and demonstrating that. It's never just been about chasing the profit or chasing the market share. It's about changing people's lives, delivering that exemplary experience. And, you know, not to make too much of, out of this, because I don't feel all that strongly about it. And I'm becoming the guy that, that makes the argument on
and
it.
I want to be
but
clear.
But it's just
I'm
different
not,
from what we're used to from Apple.
Yeah, and I'm not implying that's what they're doing. But, you know, that is a thing. As I'm looking at this and I'm thinking and I'm listening to everybody here, I'm thinking about this going, well, you know, no one would be saying much if they put it out at $3,000 and then suddenly they were going for 10 or 15 on eBay. I mean, you'd point out and say, though, that's crazy. But, you know, it again, in the same conversation, it happens. There's people that will lust after this enough and be willing to pay that kind of money. And I'm sort of in the same boat, you know. And you and the other point I wanted to point out is there's people that are just as passionate as you are about, you know, how ridiculous it may be to spend $10,000 on this watch over the $350 price. There's people out there going, no, that is insane. It's a watch. Yes. It's a piece of technology.
Yeah, there's R&D in that. I don't have a problem with that.
Well, you don't, but I'm saying there are people. Like that, so. There are people that are feeling just as passionate, you know, about who are all going to go spend $400.
Yesterday, Batwings brought it up in the chat room, and I got yelled at because I emotionally answered back, and I go, it's not fair to say that Apple's taking the piss at that price, because Business 101 says charge what the market will bear. And everyone always says, oh, they're charging too much. They're charging too much. If you own a business and you don't charge what the market will bear, then you're not going to be in business for very long. For the longest time, I used to do photo sessions for people for like $25 because I weren't confident in my craft. And then one day I went to this training thing where I had Scott Bourne, Rick Sammons, and a bunch of other, you know, high-end photographers here at a thing called the Maui Photo Festival. And Scott said to me, the only difference between an amateur photographer and a professional photographer is the confidence to charge the value for what they're worth. That very minute, I've never done a photo shoot for, say, less than $500. And it changed my life. And all it was flipping a switch. That didn't immediately make me a jerk because I started charging $500. I was paying off my 5D, you know, my plane at that time, plane 5D. And ever since then, you know, I've been charging my value for what I'm worth. And to this day, one of the things that chaps me, and Adam, I think you would understand, is when someone says to me, oh, fix my WordPress site. And they go, how much is it? And I tell them, you know, I normally don't touch these things for, say, less than $3,500. And they go, oh, my nephew says he'll do it for $50. I'm like, well, let your nephew have it. That doesn't make me a jerk because I want to charge $3,500. I feel it's going to be that much of a pain in the butt to do it. And so now people are talking about price, but we all do it if you run any sort of business.
Last word goes to the chat room, and it goes to Mullet, who says, I can't wait for the BlackBerry watch. Bookery says he's waiting for the Palm watch just as much. And Bookery says the Ford Crown Vic wasn't as nice for those that had to travel in the back of it.
You mean like police doggies?
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, no. Have we got a cool thing, Doc?
Oh, no, I'm not ready yet.
All right, hang on. We'll do an advert then. These podcasts and all these books by UK2, they're fantastic. We're going to start streaming them soon because we've had enough of live stream. And we're going to push out all the stuff that we get from via 100tb.com. So 100tb.com is an American-based division of UK2, and all the same deals that we're going to have over here, you're going to have deals that you can apply in the States as well, and they're the people that are going to be sponsoring the live stream. They are a dedicated servers kind of business, so check them out, 100tb.com. And also UK2, make sure you use the offer codes and the click-throughs from our website, because if you don't, we don't get the kudos for it. And, of course, the Bash is coming up. 3rd and 4th of July. 3rd for a curry. 4th of July for the Bash itself. The curry is £10. Everyone pays £10, kids included. But the kids don't get the beer bill at the end. That's split between the adults. the Bash itself, though, is £20 for everyone. Apart from the kids, anyone under 16 gets in free of charge. The £20 will cover absolutely everything. All your beer, all your food, all your wine, all your soft drinks, absolutely everything. All the fun on the day as well as will be covered by it. And it'll be an absolutely stunning time. It's done at a big village hall that costs us a fair bit to hire, but it's well worth the money down in the local village. So come to the Bash. It will be loads of fun. There'll be a lot of people there. Tickets are going fairly well, actually, I have to say. It's great. Thanks for those people that have bothered to buy them. It makes a world of difference. Please come to the Bash. Right. Doc, do you have a cool thing for us?
Yeah, I'm going to go to an expensive one because I just got it and I'm absolutely in love with it. Recently, I made the switch, like I said, from Canon to Sony, and I started shooting on Alpha, and I had an Alpha 6000, which I absolutely love. Maybe one of the best cameras you can get out there for the price. And the thing is, making the move to mirrorless in general. If you would take my advice, I would say go to mirrorless as soon as possible. But just picked up the Sony Alpha A7 II mirrorless digital camera, and it is insane. The number one feature that you got to go with is this thing known as a 5-axis steady shot stabilization. And we were out shooting fireworks the other day, and oh my god, that thing is amazing. Someone could come up to your shoulder and basically shake the dickens out of you like when your granny used to do, and it will take a rock stable picture in relatively low light. So you're talking a full frame sensor camera, about $1,699, and through any adapters you have. One thing that I love the most about it is with the simple adapter, I had all my Canon glasses still functional, so I didn't have to throw any glass away, but I got a camera that will run circles around any of my old Canon cameras at one half the price. So I would say check out the Sony Alpha A7 II.
Okay, not sure how that's an Apple pick, but thanks, mate.
It's because we all into photography at some sort of pics, and I take a lot, and I use it with my Apple, so yeah.
All right, that's pretty thin. Mr. Anatko, do you have a cool thing for us?
Basically, because I forgot, but I still had this like nearby, the Raspberry Pi 2, because I think that everybody who digs like Apple stuff is going to be the sort of person who's going to enjoy. Here's a computer you absolutely control from the inside. It's a Linux computer that has four USB, unlike the $1,299 MacBook. It has four USB ports, hardwired Ethernet port, hardwired HDMI port. It'll run multiple flavors of Linux. And it also has like a breakout header. So if you wanted to flip switches, turn on lights, or basically connect to LCD panels, whatever you want to do, it also has like a micro SD card slot for storage. So you basically prepare this card with Linux or whatever distro you want. And then you have a perfectly bootable computer that you can run Microsoft Office knockoffs on. You can have media players on it. The thing that makes it more relevant for Mac people is that you can actually also get a Mac emulator for it. So you can actually have it running as a Mac Classic or a Mac Plus, running like all those really cool like Mac OS 7 apps on it. What I really want to do is because this is such a popular sort of thing and the headers are standardized, you can buy for very little money like an LCD panel that includes a touchscreen that basically kind of snaps onto it, and then you write a little bit of code for it. And so what I really want to do is I want to like write a HyperCard PDA, just like a little like tiny little flat box the size of a paperback book that just does nothing but like run HyperCard stacks and just feed my nostalgia monster that way. But the coolest thing about it is that it's $35 stinking dollars, which means that you will have this little thing inside your office that you'll get it. It'll arrive about a week later. You'll say, oh, all right, that's right, I got drunk and I ordered this thing. But then like a month later, you'll think about, oh, that's right, it would be cool to have like just a standalone HDMI media player. Like, okay, great, that's what I'll use that for. And then a month later, it's like, I've got some people coming over, I'm one computer short for them, and all they need to do is edit like chapters of a book. Okay, I'll attach an old monitor to this, and they'll be editing chapters on the Raspberry Pi. It's just a really cool, fun thing to play with.
Excellent. Good pick. Thank you very much. Mr. Christensen.
I think Andy gets bonus points for picking a product that's made in the UK too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and the tenuous link to Mac.
Yes, I love my Raspberry Pi.
So I get
Raspberry
trouble
Pi.
For it. Andy gets the, oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
my chops ain't big enough. I got to work
real,
on
real quick, because I know people got to go.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pick a game for iOS called Atomus. It's sort of my latest addiction. So A-T-O-M, like atoms, because the concept here is you're given at random an atom, you know, starting with hydrogen and helium and working your way up through the elemental chart. And there is a circle, and what you do is you drag different atoms out to the edge of the circle, and you try and basically match up pairs to then get sucked together when you add a positive charge, which will also come up randomly in the game, and then you get larger and larger elements, and you score points. It's sort of hard to describe, but it's incredibly fun to play. It's incredibly good-looking game. I think there is some in-app purchase, but you don't get exposed to it. They don't put it in front of your face. You don't have to take advantage of it. I think you get the opportunity to, because the game ends when you, if you are unsuccessful in combining the atoms, the game ends if you fill the outer ring completely up. And so I think you can buy some power-ups where you can, you know, get rid of half of the atoms in the outer ring, but you don't need those. You can play the game without it. And I want to say it was free, I think. So I was trying to find the pricing on it, but Atomas, A-T-O-M-A-S, a little iOS game that's incredibly fun.
Thanks, mate. Brilliant stuff. Sorry to rush on, but Chuck?
Sure, I'll be very fast. The last couple picks that I had were in the hundreds of dollars range, so I decided to back down a little bit.
Good man.
This one, I think, cost $2. It's an oldie but a goodie. It's an iOS app called MotionX GPS, which came out, you know, as soon as the, almost,
love it.
I guess right after the original iPhone with GPS chip came in. It was the 3G, I think. And it basically turned your iPhone into a full-fledged GPS receiver, the kind you use for hiking, camping, you know, going out in the wilderness. Comes with lots of maps that you can download, so you don't need connectivity to use it. As long as you have clear line of sight to the sky, the GPS satellites will let you know where you are. You can track multiple waypoints on it. It'll integrate with your iPhone for music, so you can listen while you're hiking. What else does it? Oh, it does so many things. It can let people know where you are. It replaces a $400 handheld GPS receiver and then builds on it and then does things that, you know, that device could never do. So it's incredibly cool. Comes separate apps for iPhone and iPad. I think the iPad version is maybe $3. The iOS iPhone version is $2. Highly recommend it. Motion-X GPS. If you do any kind of hiking or camping, it's indispensable.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. And last but by no means least, Dave, do you have a cool thing for us?
I've got one, and it's completely free. Yeah. This is an iOS app called Cheat Sheet Quick Reference and Notes. Basically, it lets you record all those little things that you might forget, like where the car is parked in the car lot, your hotel room information, all these little things that you're just going to forget very quickly. And it displays them right in the notification center's today view. Now, there's no security, so don't be putting your Visa number in here. But for those little things that you just need to, what is this? Quickly recall. You don't even need to unlock your phone because it's right there in notification center. And you get a little icon to help you remember what this piece of information is about. There's 49 icons to choose from. It works really, really well. I've been using it for a few months now, and it has saved me a lot of time of trying to remember all these piddly little things that come and go during the day.
Excellent, mate. Good pick. Thank you. My cool thing is Stick Cricket 2. I was fortunate enough, thanks very much to Stick Cricket for inviting me, of being one of the testers for Stick Cricket 2 when it was in beta. And I've played it, and I enjoyed it very much. One of the things I gave Stick Cricket a bit of grief over was their charge model for IPL and for the other one, Partnerships. They gave it away free, but then effectively, you know, you really were very called upon to pay good money for it, and some of the charging I didn't agree with. This version, they can pay for it. There is a pro buy it out all you can own and much as you can eat stuff, which is a reasonable price, or you can work your way through the game earning credits and slowly build up your opportunity to get to the end prize, if you like. So they've kind of sorted out that pricing structure, and as a result, well done. They've upgraded the graphics, and the graphics are just stunning.
Would it help make the game make sense to Americans at all?
No. Well, actually, to be honest, it's more like baseball, because you go up to bat, and the guy bowls at you, and you have to hit it left or right. So, you might learn a little bit. It's good fun. It's a bat swinging game, you know, thingy. How odd can it be? Thank you very much, chaps, for coming along. I do appreciate it. I'm sorry we've overrun, but fantastic conversations, I thought. We'll be back with the Mac Show next Friday as normal. Nothing will change. It'll all be the same. These people, some of them, will be here next week, and others will be joining us again soon, I hope. Starting off top left, where are you, Doc?
You can find me at Doc Rock on Twitter, Instagram, FaceSpace, my book, wherever you want to find me. That's D-O-C-R-O-C-K. Also writing for MacUser.pro. And oftentimes on the British Tech Network as the one Yankee trying to hold it down for the USA.
Thanks, man. Mr. Anarcho, thank you very much for joining us. Where can we get you? You're on mute, sir.
If you can spell my last name, try anarcho.com, and you can also find my tech writing at suntimes.com.
Thank you, mate. Cheers. Thanks ever so much for coming along. I'm sorry we've overrun a bit. Mr. Christensen, where would you
be? You can find me at maccast.com and maccast pretty much on every other social media outlet online.
Thanks, mate. Mr. Latournas?
I'm on Twitter at Chuck Latournas. Most of my writing these days is at Macworld, macworld.com, although I did write a piece for Mac Observer, macobserver.com this week, where you can go and laugh at me about how wrong I was about the Apple Watch event prediction. And let's see, every once in a while I still post on randomaccess.com, two M's, two C's, two S's, that sort of become a more personal tech blog these days. And last but not least, trailcamper.com, which is where I have the intersection of high adventure and high technology.
Thank you. And last, Dave, where would you put the name, please?
You will find me at David Kalo on Twitter, also at appleworld.today. And finally, I co-host a podcast over on another network called Homework with my co-host, Aaron Mankey.
Brilliant. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. You can follow the network at British Tech. And I'll be back again next week, hoping not to be the only Brit defending myself against the American Horde. Have a great week. Thanks for listening.